All right, what is up, friends? It's Drew, and I'm back. I took a little hiatus because I had a little injury, so I'm going to be back recording in case you were worried. I am still here. We had a little nice vacation. We went out to Arizona, saw friends and family, and when we came back, I decided that I would take my girls to the park, so we went to the park, and as I usually do, I was climbing a tree. And when I was climbing this tree, I thought to myself, I'm pretty high enough, let's get down. So I tried to let myself down, and as I did that, I put all my weight on my left arm, and I tore my tricep tendon off of my elbow, so had to have surgery, and had about a week off from just doing business-related things, anything that I would consider fun, like lifting weights, etc. But I'm on the mend. Thank God for that. So, moral of the story, you can climb trees, you can show off in front of your kids, you can have a good time, but just be sure not to put all of your weight on one of your arms. Cool. Now that we've clarified that point, let's get on to the show. Okay, so what are we talking about? In this episode, we're going to go a little deeper into transdermal absorption. So your first question that you may have is, does it really matter what I put on my skin? And that's really a legitimate question. Does it matter what you put on your skin? I'm going to tell you the short answer is yes, it does matter. It matters a lot. If you would have asked me this question at the beginning of residency, I would have probably gone with the dogma of, you know what, not so much, because skin barrier, it's effective, it keeps everything on the outside, there's negligible absorption. In fact, I remember this story pretty clearly. I had this patient who came in just for like a skin check, and he wasn't that old, he was probably in his early 30s, and he, at the end of our exam, was about to send him home, and he's like, so should I be using sunscreen? And I said, of course, why wouldn't you be using sunscreen? And his objection was, well, my wife told me that sunscreens have estrogenic effects and I'm going to grow man boobs. And I was like, you know what, that's crazy, wear a sunscreen, goodbye. So I just totally dismissed it. But now that I've really kind of looked more closely at the data myself, and had a little bit more of a questioning lens, I would say to that guy today, yes, you should wear sunscreen, but let's be pretty specific about it. Let's be clear about what is known to be safe, and let's select that. Or I could have said something like, you know, you should wear sunscreen, but maybe focus on being out in the sun or using sun protective clothing more than the sunscreen itself. And before you go crazy and say I'm a lunatic and I'm a fringe dermatologist, I just want you to hear me out and just listen to the fact that, number one, it's unquestionable that ultraviolet rays from the sun cause skin cancer. I mean, there are like well-researched documented mutations that occur if you get a ton of sun from ultraviolet light. And there's like this stepwise progression to cancer if you continue to get sunlight. They're like these cyclopyrimidine dimers that happen on a molecular DNA level. So there's no question the sun rays cause skin cancer. But I think our solution so far has been to rely on sunscreens, like put on something that's going to absorb or reflect ultraviolet light. And that's a great starting point. But what if we spent more of our efforts in research looking at things that maybe would improve our skin's ability to withstand ultraviolet rays? And there are things out there that have been studied, but they're less mainstream. So there's a supplement called HelioCare. And this supplement is based on a leaf. It's based on a plant extract called Polypodium lucomatis. So look that up if you're interested, but it's a supplement that showed that if you took it, you have a higher sunburn threshold. So meaning you can sit in the sun longer and not burn as quickly. I don't specifically know about its effect on like DNA mutation rates. I don't think that's been studied, and that's the point I'm trying to make. It's like, why haven't we gone deeper into these alternative ways? And keep in mind, that's like a plant extract, so that's pretty natural. So why haven't we done more exploratory studies on that? That's the question I have. So rein me back in. I'm getting a little tangential here. Let's get back to this issue of absorption of what you put on your skin. If you've been listening to our podcast, you're going to stumble upon the next series and the final series on chemical sunscreens. Take a good listen to that. I haven't edited yet, so it's going to come up after this podcast. But this will blow your mind. There's a study in JAMA, and I think we've talked about this even on the first podcast. It's been a few months since I've recorded that one, so please forgive me if we're going over same materials, but I need to drive this point home to you. This episode, we'll talk about it briefly as well, the sunscreen episode, but that JAMA paper looked at transdermal absorption of sunscreens, and what the authors of this paper found that was that if you put a little bit of sunscreen on, even after a one application, the sunscreen that you put on your skin was detectable in your blood. So you can't argue with that. Like, it's making it into your skin. Now, in this episode, I want to kind of talk about the nuance behind that concept of transdermal absorption. So let's get into it. So what do I mean by that? So there are some parameters that influence the rate of absorption of the compound through your skin. And that would be things like how thick is the skin at the site of application. So let's say you apply it to your palm or your foot, the bottom of your foot. Those are some of the thickest skin sites on your body. So the rate of absorption past the stratum corneum in those areas is going to be much lower than, let's say, your eyelid. But that's one parameter. So thickness of skin determines rate of absorption. By the way, I wanted to just tell you that the eyelid skin is the thinnest cornified layer, meaning it has a stratum corneum layer of skin on your body. So when I give my patients topical steroids, for example, to use on their eyelid because they have eyelid dermatitis, I tell them, hey, you can't use it for very long on your eyelid. Why? Because you can get glaucoma, you can get cataracts from putting topical steroids on your eyelid because the skin is so thin there that absorption is so high. It just like happens immediately. So you have to be careful with things on your eyelids, for example. Genital skin is actually a mucosal site, and a mucosal site means it doesn't have a stratum corneum. There's no cornified layer, so there's basically like full absorption there. So that means if you're putting something on your genital skin or in your mouth or around your anus, those are all mucosal sites. Inside of your nose, you have to be careful because absorption is really high at those sites in particular. So site matters. Thickness of skin matters. What else matters? Well, this one may be pretty obvious, but is the barrier intact or is it compromised? So, for example, in a condition like eczema or psoriasis, the barrier is compromised because the skin is inflamed. And so, if you put something on inflamed skin with a compromised barrier, the rate of absorption is going to be really high, much higher than if you had a normal intact skin barrier. So this brings up this point that I wanted to make in this episode, and that's if you're applying something to treat eczema, you better be mindful of what you're putting on your skin. It matters even more in that scenario. So if you're interested in using something natural, you better be sure it doesn't contain a fragrance, because if you're applying a natural, a quote, natural skincare product with a fragrance on your skin, on eczema active skin, you're probably going to develop a problem. You're going to develop an allergy to the fragrance. Whereas previously you may have not had an allergy to the fragrance, there's a good chance you will develop it on inflamed skin because the immune cells are seeing the fragrance. It's an epitope or an antigen. It's like the configuration of the protein, and then your immune cells can internalize it and they become sensitized to it. They mount an immune response against the antigen or the protein, the epitope of the fragrance, so that every time in the future when your skin sees that, even if the barrier is intact, it's going to mount this immune response. And that's literally what's behind an allergy. It's an immune response to something that you've been sensitized to. Let me give you an example of this. So in my clinic, and this has happened on a number of occasions, but this one sticks out in my mind. I had this young college kid comes in. He walked through a field of poison ivy inadvertently. I think his car got stuck and he had to walk through this field of poison ivy. So he comes in to me, and this was about 2 weeks after that episode, and he's already been having a terrible raging dermatitis to poison ivy. And he's putting all kinds of things on his body. He's putting on natural lotions to try to calm the eczema down. He's putting on Benadryl to try to relieve his itch. Lo and behold, everything is making this kid worse because, one, his skin barrier is compromised because of the poison ivy. And then, two, he's now developing an allergy to what he's putting on. And so even if you're trying your best, you're trying to treat yourself, you might be inadvertently making yourself worse and further compounding a problem because the skin barrier is broken. And you could be certain that what a person is putting on their skin in a scenario like that, it's making it into their body. So at any rate, I had to give this kid like a month worth of steroids, like oral steroids, to calm down his inflammation. And but that person is like permanently sensitized to poison ivy, likely sensitized to fragranced products in the future. So bringing it back, I think it's extra important that if you have a compromised skin barrier, that you're really even more careful about what you put on your skin, knowing that it's making it more so into your body than if you had an intact skin barrier. And the same would be said about a mucosal site like your mouth. So I think you should be kind of careful about toothpastes. And I'm not trying to be a fearmonger here at all. That's not my intention by sharing that. I just think that you can bet that what you're putting in your mouth, and beyond just swallowing something, just leaving it in your mouth, it's going to make it into your body. I mean, this, I think, relates to like gingival disease, for example, and heart disease. Like, why are those two things connected? It's likely because the bacteria that are in your mouth, possibly, I mean, I don't know mechanistically why that is the truth, but I can at least make an educated guess here that perhaps the bacteria are releasing some kind of inflammatory chemical. It's like a toxin. Like bacteria, if they're pathogenic, for example, bacteria release something called lipopolysaccharide, which is this acute inflammatory inducing compound. And so possibly, you know, it's happening in your mouth. If you have gingival disease, gum disease, you there's like this intimate connection with that and what's going on in your blood, because that inflammatory compound is going from your mouth to your blood, making it into your heart, right? And then causing coronary artery disease, plaque buildup, because that compound may be toxic to your vascular endothelium, the lining of the walls of your arteries in your heart and elsewhere. I mean, that's a very well-defined relationship. So I'm just trying to get you to think that your body is intricately connected to itself. So that means what you eat matters because it affects your overall health. That's unquestionable. And by extension, what you put on your skin matters. And we have data to support that statement unequivocally. That's a true statement. So that was a really long-winded answer. So what you apply to your skin matters. I hope I've illustrated that really clearly. It matters even more depending on where you're putting it on your skin. Think eyelid, scrotum, anus, mouth, vagina, genital skin. Absorption is much higher there. It also depends on the compound. So if a compound is lipophilic, meaning it's fat soluble, there's a much greater likelihood that it's going to get absorbed into your skin, because the skin barrier, well, it's composed of proteins, but it's largely composed of fats. Things like ceramides, cholesterol, and free fatty acids, these constitute like the lipid barrier, the oil barrier of your skin. And so if you have something that can penetrate that easily, obviously it's going to make it more easily into your skin. Duration of application matters too. So you're obviously, and this is a logical statement, but if you're putting something on your skin once a day for a week, the amount that's absorbed would be less than if you put it on once a day for a month. So duration matters, whereby the more you apply, the more you're getting absorbed into your body. And these things add up. So if you're anything like me and you want to live a really healthy life, try to use things that are, I'd say, found in nature. And things that we know are not harmful, because then you're going to argue with me and say, oh, cyanide's found in nature? Put that on your skin. No, I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying that if you have a compromised skin barrier, you could use Vaseline. I'm not saying that Vaseline causes cancer. I don't think that at all. But I know that petrochemicals cause cancer. In fact, they're type 1 carcinogens. Like diesel gas, for example, is a type 1 carcinogen. That's a petrochemical. Petroleum is also based on petrol. That's why it's called petroleum. So make that connection. So instead of using Vaseline, petroleum jelly, maybe use something like coconut oil or olive oil or avocado oil, because actually all three of these oils have been studied in the setting of wound healing, and all three show accelerated wound healing. So maybe think of that instead of petroleum in the future. I will unabashedly admit I have definitely recommended Vaseline to my patients in the past, and it's still something that I do, because I don't say use Vaseline on your skin all the time every day. There are some dermatologist influencers on the web right now on social media talking about, oh, I use Vaseline on every part of my body every day of the week. And I would say that's a bad idea. That's my personal opinion. So I would rather use something that is known to be safe, found in nature, and not known to cause issues, long-term issues. Okay, we're going to end on one more story here. I just want to give you a bunch of my interesting stories. I think they're interesting. I hope you do too. So let's end the story with how did we get here? What are we doing and how did we get here? So obviously we're starting a skincare brand, but we got here because it was largely during the pandemic. So 2020 comes around, COVID happens, everyone's freaked out. We're not sure what the heck's going on. I don't even know if I can go back to work. But lo and behold, 6 weeks after we were doing video visits, which is like a very terrible way to practice dermatology, but we were forced to do it. The whole world was, frankly. We're back in clinic and we're all freaked out. We're like, oh, you got to wear a mask. Everyone has to wear a mask. We can't see your face. And I'm washing my hands like 50 times a day. No, more than that, frankly. I'm washing my hands before I touch a patient, after I touch a patient. And if I'm seeing like 30 patients, that's at a minimum 60 times a day. Not to mention like bathroom breaks, washing my hands before food, before eating. So maybe I was doing it like 75 or 100 times a day. I have no idea. But just know I was washing my hands a lot, okay? So I developed hand eczema, like severe, like bad. And I have had hand eczema as a kid. I think I was a bit OCD as a kid and I would wash my hands excessively, but I was not doing it in an OCD way during the pandemic. Just more like I was forced to, and every other doctor in the country was too. Anyone having face-to-face contact with anyone was doing it, let's face it. No pun intended there. But so I developed hand eczema, and instead of reaching for Cetaphil, I was really questioning this paradigm. Like, okay, I have this understanding of transdermal absorption. I know I have a compromised skin barrier. Like, do I want to use Cetaphil right now? Or do I want to use something like coconut oil? And so that's what I did. I was like, I feel more comfortable with coconut oil, knowing that it's It's proven to cause wound healing, to accelerate wound healing, and it's safe. Like, I consume this stuff on a daily basis, and it's full of actually polyphenols, especially if you get the virgin unrefined, the non-heat extracted coconut oil. That's what virgin unrefined coconut oil means. It retains these chemicals that actually have a lot of benefits. So anyways, I did that instead, and I found that it worked. It worked to heal my hands. My only complaint with it was it's really hard to apply. You know, you have to like grab some out of the jar, put it on your skin, let it melt, gets to get to your body's temperature to melt, and then you rub it in, and then you're left with the scent, and it's not always pleasant. But anyways, I think that moment was an enlightening moment to me. So why would I recommend Cetaphil to my patients, but I was using coconut oil on my own skin? And then I thought to myself, okay, like, this has the potential to alter the way I practice medicine and alter what I offer you, alter what I offer the public, the people I serve. So that's what got us on this journey. And it's taken us a while to get here. I will say that committing to starting a business, it forces you to change. It forces you to reprioritize your life. And so we finally got our stuff in order. I'm saying we, and I mean me. It wasn't anyone else except me. And I decided to do this. So that's what we're doing. And I appreciate you listening and watching us on this journey. And we're just going to keep putting out content that hopefully answers your questions and makes everyone better, especially myself. Okay, if you want me to cover any specific topics, DM us on Instagram. We are going to rebrand this weekend, so I'm sorry. We're going to change your name for the fourth time, but just figuring this stuff out, so as we go. I am working on, I actually have finished this publication, and I'm trying to link it to our website. Check out our website. It's mdcrafted.co, mdcrafted, one word, .co. If you share your email, we will send you a copy of this publication I've worked on. That is exciting. It's about eating your way to healthier looking skin. So if that interests you at all, send us your email. We'll send you that download. Be on the lookout for that. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a good commute, a good workout, whatever it is you're doing. Keep it up, friend. Talk to you soon.